Oh, that's right. I'm Ann Eller, right back here. And I have one of our favorites from Congress right here, Congressman Trey Gowdy. How you doing this morning, Trey Gowdy?
I'm doing wonderful. How are you doing?
Very good, very good. Guess you're glad to be back in South Carolina, huh?
Yes, ma'am. I would rather be here than anywhere else in the world.
Well, you know, I just wanted to touch on one thing. I think it's great that we have a group from South Carolina, and you and Senator Tim Scott, not only are you in the news for political stuff, but for the other stuff, like your hair.
Well, I don't know that Tim is in the news for his hair.
He's not in the news for his hair. He's in the news for being number 35 on the Hill's Most Beautiful list.
And you know what is outrageous about that is I can't think of 34 people more beautiful than Tim Scott. So I'll tell you this, Ann. One of the blessings of being able to serve this district is once a week, I sit down at a table for two with Tim Scott, and we eat dinner, just the two of us. And as wonderful a senator and House member as he is and was, he is an even better person. He is one of the best people I have ever met. So I think he's beautiful, but in the way that my mom used to say, beautiful on the inside.
Yeah, I was pretty amazed to see that list, but I couldn't agree with you more. He's a person with a real heart and a real passion for the office and for what he does.
He is a great, great guy. And I know Mulvaney and Duncan and Joe and everyone else is disappointed they didn't make the list of best looking, but all three of them are married, and they ought to be glad that they are, and we'll just leave it there.
Well, all righty. Well, I just had to address that because I thought that was pretty funny. Tim with number 35 and you with your hair issue.
Yeah, well, I cut all my hair off, so hopefully they'll find something else to talk about.
Well, it's pretty bad when that's what they put out there is the most thing, isn't it?
Well, I don't know whether to be happy that they couldn't find anything else. I've got some colleagues that are being written about for other reasons, so I guess having a bad haircut's okay.
Well, we certainly appreciate what you do up there, Trey, and there certainly are a lot of issues out there we need to talk about, but you know, one of the ones that I did want to hit is the immigration. I know that we're talking about border security, and I know you've been on this show before saying that, and I'm a little bit confused whether you feel we need the fence or whether drones or all this other stuff would be the issue. And I also would like to know, how do you feel, or how does your people in your district, which is really the more important issue, how do they feel about amnesty for 11 million people?
Well, the second question is easy. It's easy for me, and it's easy for the people I represent. And there are few things more antithetical to a 16-year career in the criminal justice system than amnesty. But like other words, for instance, beauty and fairness and justice, the definition of amnesty vacillates depending on who's doing the talking. To me, amnesty is the absence of legal consequence. So if the only way to grant someone amnesty is if they were actually facing criminal charges. There's no other form of amnesty. So I haven't met anyone who just fully embraces amnesty. Now, people who support a path to legalization or a special treatment for children under the age of, say, 16 who were brought here, you know, some people may call that amnesty, but the child has not committed a crime. So I don't know how you can apply amnesty when someone has not committed a crime. Here's the way I break down immigration. And this is maybe an oversimplification, but it'll suffice. Which of these three categories initially do you fall in? No immigration reform plan because the current law is sufficient. If it were enforced, it would be sufficient. That's one camp. Second camp, no immigration reform plan because even if you did pass something, this administration won't enforce it, no one will follow it. And the third camp is conservatives need to have ideas on whatever the salient issue of the day is. And just like there are progressive ideas on how to deal with immigration reform, there should be conservative ideas on how to deal with immigration reform. So how you fit into one of those three camps kind of dictates what your next step is. If you believe that conservatives ought to have an immigration reform plan, then the very first plank in that platform has to be actual, measurable, trustworthy border security. If that's a fence where it's geographically possible, that's great. If it's drones and other technology where it's not geographically possible, that's great. All of the above is great. But you first have to answer, do you think the current law is sufficient, so therefore do nothing? Are you, as, and I am concerned after Benghazi and IRS and the so-called Affordable Care Act, even if you pass something, what guarantee do you have that the executive branch will enforce it? Or are you in that third category that whether it's health care, whether it's education reform, conservatives have just as many ideas as so-called progressives, and we're not afraid to share them?
So where does that leave you?
It leaves me in South Carolina in August listening to the people I work for. I will say this. I've talked to people in all three camps. There are folks who say the current law is sufficient, and I would point out to them, I mean, the current law is if you're a legal permanent resident, you have to wait 10 years for your spouse to join you. I just celebrated my 24th anniversary yesterday. 10 years is a long time for a spouse to wait to join someone who's here legally. I'm not talking about illegal immigration.
Sure.
Legal immigration. 10 years is a long time. In Georgia, there were crops rotting in the field in the last 2 years because of inadequate workers. In California, lettuce and asparagus crops both rotted in the field because of inadequate workers. And don't forget, if you think the current law is sufficient, if enforced, I don't think our current border security is sufficient, regardless of whether it's enforced. So I'm probably not in that camp of no plan because the current law is sufficient. I don't think you get 11 million undocumented immigrants with a current law that is sufficient. The middle category, no plan because no matter what you do, this administration won't follow it. I mean, clearly you got to stop and consider the validity of that argument. I mean, this administration, with recess appointments and the so-called Affordable Care Act, where they decide what parts to enforce and what parts not to enforce, current immigration law, where they decide which parts to enforce and not enforce, there's a very bona fide, real skepticism that even if you come up with something, even if conservatives come up with something, that either this administration or subsequent ones will just unilaterally decide not to enforce certain categories. That is a real threat. So I you know, that middle category, I share their skepticism. I do think to that third category of whether conservatives have ideas that can work, if you overprove border security, now go back to the courtroom with me. You can call three witnesses to establish jurisdiction, or you can call 30 witnesses to establish jurisdiction. Overprove the border security to a skeptical, legitimately skeptical electorate. Overprove that you are serious about securing the border. Then overprove mandatory e-verify, which is the employment magnet. And then the third piece, which is the piece I introduced called the SAFE Act, which is internal security. The removal, the deportation, the role for state and local law enforcement officials to play in enforcing our immigration laws. If you start with, I hate to keep emphasizing the word real, but people don't trust government. People don't trust Washington. So if you can overprove to beyond a reasonable doubt to the satisfaction of the jury that you are serious about border security, e-verify, and internal security, I think at least some of the folks that I represent are open to dealing with the reality that you have 11 million people here currently. They're not open to the reality that it's 11 million today and it's going to be another 11 million 10 years from now. That they're not open to that reality. But they are open if you do what you're supposed to do from a security standpoint, particularly with children who were brought here under the age of 16 that have no criminal histories, no gang affiliation. They've done well in school. They've made commitments to the culture and to the community that they are, for all intents and purposes, they've grown up as Americans. I was at church, 2 days ago, and there is more of an openness, at least I have detected, on dealing with the children than perhaps there was a decade ago. But only if you satisfy people that this is a real security remedy and not a political fix.
I couldn't agree with you more on that, Trey, because I think the border is where it starts. But what do we do with the 11 million that are here?
Well, here's an idea. Somebody sent me an email the other day and said, I can't support you anymore because of your position on immigration. They thought I was too tough on immigration.
Okay.
And I thought, well, how could you know what my position on immigration is? Because I'm still in the process of listening to people. I mean, I haven't. But I sat down over the weekend and said, okay, put on your old hat for a second. Let's assume that someone has said, okay, and you and Trey have to come up with a plan for the 11 million. The border is secure. E-Verify is in place. You've got state and local law enforcement involved in the immigration enforcement. But it's you and Trey and your listeners who have to come up with a plan on what to do with the 11 million. What I think makes sense to me is number one, apply a background check. And what does that background check look like? I would disqualify anyone with a felony conviction. All right, that's not too tough. I also would disqualify people who have certain misdemeanor convictions. In South Carolina, domestic violence is a misdemeanor. I don't want anyone here. We've got citizens committing domestic violence that I prosecuted. I don't want any non-citizens.
Right.
That is a disqualifier to me. The Senate said 3 DUIs was too much. You could argue that 3 DUIs is 2 DUIs too many. So you have to apply a background check. Then you have to ask. You got to divide the 11 million into subgroups because they're not all similarly situated. Some have been here for 20 years and never had a brush with the law and done everything that you would expect guests to do other than that they did not go home when their visa expired. That is a different analysis to me than someone who has overstayed their visa and been here for a month and just wants to avail themselves of the fact that our country happens to be debating immigration reform. So I get frustrated when I hear witnesses in Washington talk about the 11 million as if it's one monolithic group, a homogeneous group where they're all the same. That's not the case. There are folks that maybe have already proven that they're really good neighbors and really good citizens. And then there are folks who have proven that we would be better off without them in this country. So you can't look at the 11 million and apply, either legalization or not legalization as a whole. You have to have, I hate to say a case-by-case analysis, but you have to have a different level of scrutiny depending on the facts.
Sure.
I think here are two things that you can kind of rule out the polar extremes. I don't hear many people advocating for mass deportation. Anybody.
Mm-hmm.
I also don't hear any conservatives arguing for mass legalization, mass amnesty, if you will. So there's something in between. There's something in between the practical lack of reality of deporting 11 million people that you can't currently identify, and there's something antithetical to our nature about just acting as if it didn't happen, that people didn't overstay their visas across the border illegally. So how you come up with what is in the best interest of our country, I'm not interested in coming up with what's in the best interest of the 11 million. I'm not, you know, we have protesters in Washington. There was one last weekend who was waiting on me in the hall and shanded me a cantaloupe because of something Steve King said. And you know, I told this young lady, I said, look, if you're trying to be persuasive, insulting members of Congress who did not say what you find offensive is not going to be persuasive. And you know, arguing that you have a right to something is not going to be persuasive. So, you know, I have a tendency to want to break the 11 million down into subgroups depending on contributions to the community, assimilation into our culture. Do you want to be a citizen? Or are you satisfied with a legal working status?
Well, I think I think that really we almost, in order to get a handle on this, we either have to have them all set up to have green cards and then be able to make the decisions, the subgroups and everything like you're talking.
Yes, but here's the one thing, and I ask, I've got preachers in my family. I have great respect for the women and men in ministry. But I cannot look an Ecuadorian or Guatemalan couple in the eyes that did things the way we told them to do them. They stayed in their home country and they applied to become an American citizen. I cannot look them in the eyes and say that you are going to have to wait longer while we offer citizenship to people who did not follow the rules. I just cannot do that.
Oh, I'm not forgiving that. I'm just saying with a green card, at least you could be able to track them and they could pay taxes, couldn't they, Trey?
Absolutely. You can and you can travel, you can pay taxes, you can, I mean, that's the other thing about the 11 million is at some point, no matter what plan you come up with, you have to identify them.
Right.
They either have to come forward or you have to give state and local law enforcement a role. You have to identify who's here.
Yes.
Like, when I thought over the weekend, you know, all the terror alerts and the embassies, you know, I stopped and thought to myself, it is not asking too much that a sovereign nation know who is in our country.
Exactly.
That's not asking too much.
Exactly. I couldn't agree with you more on that, Trey, and that's why I was saying a green card, so at least we could track. And then from that point, you could make the decisions on your subgroups and whatnot.
Yeah, I just, you know, whenever I hear, and I hear it all the time in Washington, 11 million aspiring Americans, what I immediately hear when I hear that is a political comment. Because all 11 million do not want to be citizens, and all 11 million can't pass a background check.
Exactly.
So why are you talking about the 11 million as if it's 11 million nuns, or 11 million, you know, chairmen to the board of deacons, or 11 million anything, radio talk show hostesses or prosecutors?
Exactly. All right. Well, then, I guess so. During these next 4 weeks or 5 weeks that you have here, you're going to be hearing more from a lot of people in your district.
On every issue.
On every issue.
And you really can't be, I mean, you stop and think, it's the House of Representatives. How can you represent the people in your district if you don't know how they feel? So part of it is scheduling, you know, formal events, but also, you know, frankly, part of it, Ann, is just going to the grocery store or Walmart or Costco or church, and people, I do something in my district where anyone who wants to talk to me for 30 minutes can come talk to me for 30 minutes. We set them up on a regular basis, and you don't have to wait behind a microphone at a town hall. You don't get limited to just one question. You get 30 minutes. And I'm hearing from lots of different perspectives on immigration. The churches are more involved. I've got friends who are farmers. They obviously have an interest. I'm come from a law enforcement background, so respect for the rule of law and kind of that middle category, if you will, of what guarantee do we have that subsequent administrations are actually going to enforce the law. That is something that I'm really interested in. So, yeah, IRS, Benghazi, Obamacare, immigration, there are a lot of things that the representatives need to be listening to the people they work for on.
Absolutely. Now, Trey, I guess when you go to the grocery store, does anybody ever come up and ask you, you're having a good hair day or a bad hair day?
I usually wear a cap to eliminate that, but, you know, I'm lucky in that I live on the same side of Spartanburg that I grew up on, so, you know, people have been seeing me since I was a kid. I delivered the newspapers for some of them, and my dad took care of some of the kids, and people are wonderful, and but, you know, what I tell folks back home is if you do it the right way, every aisle of the grocery store is a town hall.
Absolutely.
Now, I mean, if you listen and people feel like you're approachable, and church is, you know, kind of the same way. People who don't see you during the week and maybe don't feel comfortable calling will feel comfortable coming up to you at church and saying, you know, think about this or think about that. There's no way you can be a representative for an area if you're not out and about listening to people.
Absolutely. Now, we've only got a couple minutes left here, but I do want to ask you about that information that just has is leaking out there about Lois Lerner and the Federal Elections Commission. Since you're so heavily invested in the IRS investigation, have you had any chance to tell us anything about that?
Well, it is go back several weeks, and with Lois Lerner planting a question at some boring ABA convention, look how we're on what the 8th major issue with respect to the latest now being that the Federal Election Commission is sending emails, trading emails back and forth with the IRS on certain conservative groups.
Right.
So, you know, at a minimum, it provides more reason to have more testimony, more investigation, more hearings, either ways and means or oversight. But the whole administration narrative that there's nothing there, that this is just a phony, made-up scandal, almost on a weekly basis, we find another reason to believe that this is an incredibly serious scandal. And this is the other thing, and it affects every other component of government. When you know that Lois Lerner or the FEC may conspire with respect to applications for 501c4 status, how does that make you feel knowing that the IRS also wants to be in charge of your health insurance?
Absolutely.
And if they're willing to target you in this area, maybe they'll target you because they don't agree with your immigration position. Or maybe they'll target you because you have this bumper sticker or that bumper sticker. It all goes back to whether or not you can trust the people that are supposed to be working for you. They're supposed to be public servants working for you, and they're targeting you. So, yeah, these scandals, I don't care how many times Jay Carney and the president say they're phony, that defense has not worked. It reminds me of the Menendez brothers' defense from California. They killed their parents and then claimed that they were orphans and that people should feel sorry for them. It's just a stupid defense that's not working, and the next defense they come up with is not going to work either. This scandal's not going anywhere. Benghazi's not ending. The IRS is not ending. The so-called Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, has been an absolute disaster. So I know that they want to talk about something else, but the people I work for don't want to talk about anything else. We're going to focus on this.
And what about, Trey, when you go back only having 9 days to raise the debt ceiling or not raise the debt ceiling? What's your feeling on that?
Well, I think the 9 days is for the CR. We run out of money at the end of September.
Oh, okay.
The debt ceiling is sometime October, November. And I think all your listeners have been accustomed. Congress can have 99 days or 9 days to do something. It makes no difference. They're going to wait till the last day, no matter how much time they have. So you can give them 2 years and say, y'all need to start planning now. We're going to run out of money on X date. It won't make any difference. The day before Armageddon is the day that they're going to decide to get serious about dealing with it. And I hate it. It's no way to run a government. It's no way to run a business. But just look in the limited time I've been in Washington, how many times has it happened this way? We get on the very last day, up till midnight, the clock starts counting down, you watch it on Fox News, and then all of a sudden we come up with some remedy that doesn't really fix the problem. It just kind of kicks it on down the road for a spell. So, whether it's 9 days or 900 days, we wait till the last minute. And I'm not going, I think CRs are a miserable way to run a railroad to begin with. I just think it's a miserable, that's not the way it was set up to do. We should budget it and we should pass appropriations bills or not pass them. But a CR is not the way to go. From a debt ceiling standpoint, we've raised it 80-something times. And here we sit on the precipice of being asked to raise it again with a fourth entitlement looming, a fourth entitlement program.
Which, so Obamacare.
Yes. I think it's going to be a very potentially contentious but certainly interesting fall about the direction of our country. And the frustration for the House, I was on the radio this morning with Dr. Bennett, and he was quoting, I think, Aristotle about power. And the House has some authorities and powers. We may have the power to stop certain things from happening, but we do not have the power to make other things happen.
Exactly.
But we need to use the tools that we do have. And every now and again, you just have to draw a line in the sand and say beyond which we're not going to cross. And I think you may see that this fall.
So there may be that line in the sand that we don't cross.
Well, there needs to be. We're $16 trillion in debt. People don't trust government. Our foreign policy is a disaster. So this seems to me like a pretty good time to start drawing lines.
You're absolutely right. Well, I want to tell you, I always enjoy having you on my radio show. It's a pleasure to get the straight shooting side of Trey Gowdy here. But I also want to tell you, Trey, I happened to watch Greta and Hangout, and that was a real interesting conversation y'all had.
Well, you mean on the Google chat?
Right, exactly.
Yeah. I got to be honest with you, Ann. Those webcams to me are kind of creepy.
Yeah, I agree about that, but the conversation was good.
Yeah, the conversation was good. I used to prosecute people on webcams, so I she's a former lawyer, and she wanted to go back and talk about the old days, which I enjoy doing. She, like you, very bright, very good questioner, and I enjoy talking to people that ask good questions. And I appreciate her letting guys from South Carolina come on her show.
Absolutely. Well, Congressman Trey Gowdy, I certainly hope that you get an earful while you're home, and I certainly hope we'll have you back on real soon.
I would love that. I hope you have a great week.
All right. Thanks so much, Congressman Trey Gowdy. Bye-bye. God bless.
Bye-bye. God bless you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.